Welcome to Lennox Crazy Podcast. Today I'm pleased to introduce to all of you Patrick Lauer, Bonsai Kitten, Gentoo developer. Patrick just recently rejoined the Gentoo project at the rejoice of many, me for one. Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome, Patrick. Sure is nice having you back around. Well, you've always been around the Gentoo for a while, but it sure is nice having you back in the ranks of a developer. I always enjoy the way you help people. You're always real upbeat, and you're in a good mood, and you're willing to help anybody that has a problem.
Well, but people help me, so in the end, I profit too.
Is Gentoo your first open source project?
I would say it's the first one I've actively contributed to. I've played around with many things, but in the end, Gentoo is, it kind of fits me well. So it's always great fun to handle bugs and to find broken stuff and fixing stuff and all that.
How long have you been a Gentoo user?
I've tried to track it down, but I'm not really sure about the date. Must have been somewhere in early 2002 when I started with Gentoo. And since then, I've tried a few other distros that always come back. It's just the best one out there.
How did you come up with the nick Bonsai Kitten?
Oh, that was a very long time ago. There was this great website, bonsaikitten.com, where they had this funny concept of storing cats in bottles and claiming it was all an old Japanese craft of breeding-shaped cats. People were quite offended at that. I was very amused with the concept and used it as a nickname. And then it kind of stuck, and I'm still using it. But I also have Dr. Evil as a kind of second nickname.
Yeah, a lot of people know you by that. They don't know it's the same person.
Well, I also have a third one, Amazing Pudding.
I saw that one the other day, yeah.
It's great for confusing people.
Yeah, it confuses them, too. I was talking to you on the IRC, and the guy goes, "That's Dr. Evil." So they didn't even realize that it was the same person, you know.
I get that reaction quite often. It's really amusing to see people react differently to different personalities of you. You should try it yourself. It's really great.
How and where have you implemented Gentoo, and why was it chosen?
Actually, I never really implemented it anywhere. It has always been there when I came. So it seems to be a secret weapon of sysadmins everywhere. But I've seen it in small and large companies, mostly hidden in the background, doing stuff. And even the managers often didn't know it was there because Gentoo is evil and all that. It's quite strange.
What has your journey been like with Linux, and how did it start?
It started back in, let me think, Red Hat 5.2. It should have been around 99 or so. Friend gave me the CDs, and I just tried to install it. Linux was really horrible at that time. I mean, the installers were crappy, the package management was bad, applications were buggy, and still it outran Windows so badly, I turned back to Windows a few times, but Linux was already so much more fun. And when I started studying in end of 2000, we had to do lots of programming, and the Windows box kind of died every 3 weeks or so. I was getting so tired of reinstalling and reconfiguring and downloading patches and all that stuff. So at that time, I switched to full-time Linux use, and for the last, 1.5 years, I don't even have a working Windows install anymore because it committed suicide. It was quite scary. I upgraded my machine to 4 gigs of RAM, and the Windows install just surrendered. Oh my god, 4 gigs of RAM, dead. Install CD couldn't boot, so no more Windows for me. All Linux now.
What motivated you to become a Gentoo developer once again?
I think my biggest motivation was the huge pile of bugs we have, and I was filing so many bugs and they were not getting resolved in a reasonable time frame. So at the moment I think I'm down to around 250 bugs. Flame Eyes is up to 1,400 or 1,500 open bugs. That's just insane, and the only way to improve the situation is to get your hands dirty and start fixing stuff. I think that was my biggest motivation.
What aspects of Gentoo do you feel the developers and maintainers have got right?
I think the package management is rather nice. I've had to work with Fedora and Ubuntu at work, and it's quite painful. And compared to that, Gentoo is very user-friendly and easy. The hackability, I mean, you take an e-build, you add a line, and suddenly you have a patch, and it's quite easy. I think that's the biggest strength. But also, for example, the init system is really shiny. The tool chain just works. I mean, you can compile stuff, and it actually finds all the headers and lots of those funny things. Like the portage tree, this one huge repository with, I don't know, how many, 12,000 packages now? That's just brilliant. I mean, you need a package, you just tell the package manager, give me, and it does, and you have it. Everyone's happy. There's other distributions catching up, in my opinion, but Gentoo is still a bit ahead at the moment. And I think if everyone works together a bit more, Gentoo can still be a lot better.
What is it about Gentoo you would like to see improved?
I think the way, for example, mailing lists are handled, or some people just have to crap flood every thread, so that most discussions turn into a one-sided monologue. That should be improved, but how do you improve it? That's quite tricky. I still haven't found a reasonable way. Apart from having a dictator just swinging the big ban hammer and removing all unpleasant people. But I don't think that's a really nice and democratic way to solve it.
How would you bring the Gentoo community closer together?
We had a very interesting idea about 2 years ago to have a big meeting, just like physically meeting somewhere in, maybe in Spain, maybe some nice warm place where the sun shines a lot. Just put everyone in a room together and wait what happens. Because if you look back at, for example, the FOSDEM and Linux World Expo and all these big meetings where many Gentoo developers and users meet, there's huge communication effects, because instead of writing a long email and getting misunderstood, you just grab a piece of paper, sketch it, and the other person understands the idea. It's so much faster and more efficient. And you also have like the whole spectrum of language, sarcasm, irony, jokes, which gets lost in this text-based medium. IRC and emails are just quite limiting. I think it would be very interesting to have a global Gentoo meeting, but the logistics and everything around it, it's very, very difficult to arrange.
As a new recruit to the Gentoo developer pool, how would you advise new Gentoo users to contribute to the community?
That's quite tricky. I think the communication channels within Gentoo aren't really optimized at the moment. So for newcomers, there's a huge amount of learning to do, and many get frustrated. For example, there's so many new e-build bugs and few people handling them. But we do have a Sunrise overlay, which is exactly for that specific case. it's a user-managed e-build overlay, would be a very good training ground for these e-builds. But most people that even know about Bugzilla don't know about Sunrise. The same way there's people posting stuff in the forums instead of using Bug Tracker, people posting on the mailing list instead of using the forums, people using the forums instead of IRC. The whole communication infrastructure is a bit tricky. So getting involved takes lots of motivation. But I think once you have a few people guiding you, it gets very easy. So what you should look out for is people that can teach you, people that can share their experience with you, and then it should be quite easy to contribute.
What open source software can you not live without at home and at work?
Oh, there's quite a few. I mean, without SSH, how do you administrate a computer? I'm not going to walk over to the server room. There's the whole spectrum of audio and video players like Amarok or MPlayer, VLC. They just work. It's so great. I mean, I still get questions from Windows users like, ooh, what codec does this movie use? And I just say, I don't care. I use MPlayer. MPlayer can handle it. Then you have all the little shell tools. I mean, the whole spectrum, set, awk, find, cut, and dozens of other small and very specific utilities. But they make it so easy to just work on a dozen machines, and it's not really effort, it just happens. And of course, the whole open source environment where you can dig in and fix stuff if it breaks, and you're not dependent on some strange vendor who has maybe a different time zone for the support people and all those annoying things that people have to put up with. I would say it's a whole open source environment I can't live without anymore.
Which open source programs would you like to see developed?
I think there's still a lot of potential in this, let's say, decentralized and community-oriented area, because right now we have big monolithic things like bug trackers. There's not even a real exchange of data between bug trackers. So if someone reports a bug for Ubuntu, the same thing might exist as a bug for Gentoo, but there's no cross-communication. And I think this whole collaboration environment would need lots of research and lots of development, but if that could be improved, it would be really great for, I mean, for us developers, for us users. I mean, I'm a user too. I think that's what's really lacking. The whole, we need an office replacement and all that. I don't really see that anymore. I mean, there's editors like Emacs, there's editors like Kate, there's OpenOffice. We already have all those bits. But it's more the communications infrastructure where I see opportunities for the future.
What resources have you found most helpful when troubleshooting within Gentoo?
The community. That's one huge asset that makes Gentoo so easy to use. If there's a problem, you have Gentoo Wiki, which is still not an official Gentoo project, where you often find specific hints for your, I don't know, for your HP laptop, which has a very weird network card. And you have forums, IRC, all that is just one huge helper. And whenever I run into a problem, first thing I do is RTFM, which all users should learn to do. And if that doesn't work, I just ask on IRC for hints or pointers or maybe even a concrete solution, and it usually works.
What resources have you used to keep up to date with the latest trends in open source software and to provide tips and tools?
I would say a mix of web browsers, RSS feeds, which is very convenient, email, which is still kind of a backbone of everything, and I don't really work on keeping up with things. I listen to other people finding stuff, and maybe there's something I like.
Can you explain the basics of an e-build?
That's a trick question. Well, at its heart, an e-build is just a small shell script. You can tear it apart into two big units. One is the metadata, which is stuff like the home page, dependencies, all those things that describe, well, metadata, describe what the e-build provides and what it can do. And then there's the actual functions and code. For example, a source unpack function, which just unpacks your data to a temporary directory. Source compile, which, as the name implies, compiles it. Source install, which installs it to a directory. In many cases, those are just like templates, because every e-build using AutoTools has a very similar setup. So why replicate it in every e-build? So that part is abstracted into e-classes, which are basically building blocks. So you can define a generic source unpack function, and in your e-build, you don't even have to state it anymore. It just uses the one from the e-class. And the whole thing is, yeah, simple shell script. So if you want to understand e-builds, you should start with shell, especially bash, and maybe just play around with the e-build command, which is a simple front end for just handling single e-builds. And what most people use, Emerge, that's a kind of wrapper around everything. Most people never have to look under the hood how stuff works, and just lots of magic, and it works.
In what ways have you helped the open source community in the past, and in what ways would you consider helping the community in the future?
I've spent lots of time on IRC, which some people see as a waste of time, but I think that has trained me well enough to manage the LPI certifications, because you just see so many different issues and problems. I think I was one of the first ones to try to build at least every e-build in the tree, which is a quite interesting exercise that has caused me to open many bugs. I think over the last 2 years, that's around 1,500, but that doesn't really matter. I mean, it's mostly trivial bugs that get closed after a time. Everybody's happy. And at the moment, I'm more focusing on improving things from the inside, because filing bugs is a bit, I mean, it's a bit silly. Doesn't really fix the problem. So what we need is not people who file bugs, but people who provide patches, who test stuff, people that can actually commit the fixes. So I think I'm going to focus on recruiting people and maybe finding a new way to let power users communicate better. I mean, right now we only have the ranks of full developer and user. And in between there's this gray area of power users and people that could become devs but don't want to commit to that, or don't have the time, or they think they don't have the time. So I think we could use a kind of in-between rank, like a trusted tester. We already do have Arch testers, but in my opinion, that doesn't go far enough. and getting people involved so I don't have to do all that stuff, that's going to be an interesting challenge.
Yeah, well, good luck. That'd be great. Yeah, there's a bunch of guys out there and girls out there that could certainly help out a lot if they could just maybe someone was willing to get it a little bit organized.
Yeah, but it's, again, a communications problem. There's many people that want to contribute and they don't know how. There's people like me who would like to help people contribute, but I don't know who these people are. So just getting all parties involved in one place and starting to communicate, that's going to be the catalyst, I think.
How much trouble within Gen 2 will it be to go to Python 2.6?
Well, of course, Portage, as it is written in Python, might have some issues, but as far as I know, those have all been fixed, and well, the effect is negligible. It's just small changes in few places. Packages, well, as far as I know, there's quite a few failures, but most of them are very old stuff. So that's just going to be lots of work, but not inherently difficult. It's not like, for example, a new GCC that breaks stuff. It's just things getting a bit obsolete and bit rotting. So in my opinion, it's not really going to be difficult, just lots of work, and the Python herd is a bit understaffed at the moment, as far as I can tell, which is one of the reasons why I'm considering joining them, just to help them a bit.
Same question for a look ahead to Python 3.0.
I think Python 2.6 is going to stay there for a long time, because the changes from 2.5 and 2.6 to Python 3 are quite disruptive. For example, the change of the print statement into a print function that basically kills all old code. This is 2-to-3 converter, which takes a Python 2 code and converts it into Python 3. It sounds quite easy, but you still need to manually check if it's really doing what you want it to do. And I don't think that there's the manpower and even the will to port all old applications to Python 3. So I think it's going to coexist with Python 2.6, and no one will really notice the difference.
What gives you the most enjoyment within the Gen 2 community?
There's many things to enjoy. I mean, there's the daily updates. In the morning, turn on the screen, go to your computer, and first thing you do is emerge --sync, and you notice, hey, cool, new version of this. Whoa, new version of that. Cool. I think that's really fun. I mean, you have every day new packages, new stuff. It's like a never-ending stream of small gifts, Christmas every day. Also, the community can be really great. If you have a problem, you just ask and someone might know. Well, but that's a bit ignoring the bad sides, like, for example, the rather politically charged things and long flame wars and all that. That's one of the things we could live without, but how can you enjoy the good things if you don't have any bad things?
Well, I think that's just the nature of people. I know even where I work, I mean, there's some people that aren't that nice, and you just have to kind of live with them. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to like it, but you just kind of, you have to put up with it a little bit and just don't let it bring you down.
Yeah, but I've seen quite a few people get so demotivated that they just quit replying to the mailing lists. Some even retreat from IRC and switch to a like maintenance-only mode. So those people, instead of discussing and being able to share their experience, retreat, and that's a kind of loss for everyone. And I hope, I wish we could make it a lot easier for everyone, and to reduce all this political stuff.
Walk me through the process of building the tree to find bugs.
Well, there are different ways to handle it. What I usually do at the moment is at first to generate a list of all packages I want to test. So the easiest way is, well, not using Portage actually, because it doesn't have a nice way of doing it. Once you have that list, you just take every package in the list, you install all dependencies of this package. I usually use binary packages for that to speed it up a bit. And then you compile the package, and I log everything. Portage has this very nice logging since version 2.0.51, I think. It's quite old and it works very well. So it logs every build into a file. So at the end of a day, I have on the order of, let's say, 1,500 log files. And then I just grep for error because, well, I'm looking for errors. If it has no errors, I don't really care about it. And then just look at every file that matches. Then when I notice something that really looks like a bug, I look on Bugzilla for that package if it has any open bugs. And if it doesn't, I open a new bug for this. And if I'm in the mood and just going through a big list, I can manage about one bug a minute, but it's still a very slow and manual process. I don't see any way of automating the bug submission part, because sometimes you have a stupid failure. Like, for example, there was a combination of Qt and KDE libs. If you upgraded one, the other failed. So you had to, well, if you emerge the other one as a binary package, other packages wouldn't find it. So if you updated Qt, you also had to manually recompile KDE libs, and then you could build all the other packages again. If you do automated bug filing, this case won't be seen. So suddenly you're filing about 275 bugs for KDE packages, which are not really bugs. So that's a manual part of the process. But after a time, you kind of see, oh, that looks like a compiler issue. That one looks like a missing package config dependency again. Then it gets quite easy. So that's my basic setup for building every package in the tree. It's in the end about 20 lines of shell scripts, and it works quite well.
Okay, Patrick, thank you very much for the interview.
Thanks for inviting me.
And I'll see you on IRC.
Okay,
bye-bye. Okay, bye.